I'm Jody, the mom.
And I'm Dr. Barr, the doc.
And this is Mom and Doc Talk, where we talk all things healing pans and pandas.
We bring together the mom experience and the doc expertise to give you the information and tools you need to help make the next right decision to get your child back.
Let's dive in. Hi there, it's Jody, the mom side of Mom and Doc Talk. Dr. Barr and I are taking a short summer break to soak up some family time, and we hope you are too. While we're away, we're bringing back some of your favorite episodes, especially powerful stories from parents who've been where you are and found their way forward with homeopathy. We hope these episodes give you a little extra hope and a reminder that healing is possible. The Mom and Doc Talk podcast is brought to you by Resilience Naturopathic, a team of naturopathic doctors specializing in helping children with PANS pandas heal through classical homeopathy. Our providers are supported by a team made up largely of PANS parents, so we truly understand what you are going through. We work with families around the world and are determined to change how PANS families experience healthcare. You can learn more about us at resiliencenaturopathic.com. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome back to Mom and Doc Talk. We are thrilled to be joined by a very special guest today to share her and her child's story about PANS and the recovery that they've gone through. And we go beyond PANS and what we're going to talk about today. So let me introduce you to her. We have Julie, who's joining us today. She lives in Southwest Missouri. She is the mom of a 19-year-old daughter, Lily, and a 16-year-old son, Liam. She's now an event planner for children's consignment sales in three states, Oklahoma, Missouri, and Illinois, after spending 19 years as a chiropractor. Liam was diagnosed with dyslexia, dysgraphia, and dyspraxia in the second grade, so she was thrown into the world of learning disabilities and advocating for Liam's needs in the classroom. She's happy to be sharing his panda's journey in the hopes that it may help another parent find their way to healing with their child sooner. So welcome, Julie. We are so thrilled to have you. I'm going to just be honest, thrilled to have you back because we had an issue with the recording that we did yesterday. And you are such an advocate for your children and for other PANS kids and families that you were willing to come back and record with us a second time. And I feel like I need to call that out because it just speaks to your commitment to this community, even though you have recovered to a point that it's not necessarily something you need to be spending a lot of time in anymore. So thank you for your willingness to come back, because I just got to tell you guys, like, I know I'm spoiler alert here potentially, but it was such a good episode that I was like, we can't have lost this episode. So I'm so grateful that you're willing to come back.
Oh, I'm happy to be here.
So before we dive into all of the stuff with your story, tell us just a little bit more about yourself beyond what we shared in the bio. What makes you tick? Tell us about you.
Gosh, I don't know. Yeah, I'm a mom of two. So that's, you know, a big focus of my life. I spent a lot of years in the chiropractic world, you know, in the natural healing world. So I feel like that set me up for eventually landing where we landed with resilience and seeing Liam as an entire person and trying to focus on his healing in that respect, as opposed to kind of putting out fires that was my initial approach with his symptoms, because I didn't realize it was a syndrome at first. I thought he was kind of a collection of kind of a peculiar symptoms cropping up. And it's been a long journey. So I really wanted to share what he's been through, what we've been through as a family, in the hopes that it might help somebody else as they're starting their journey.
Start us in the very beginning, Julie. How did PAN show up in y'all's life?
So we're coming up on the 6-year mark when the first symptom showed up. It was right at the beginning of COVID. So it was Easter weekend of 2020. So everything had shut down in mid-March. So school was out. We were all just kind of hunkered down. And Liam developed a fever and was lethargic for a couple days. And I didn't think much of it. It didn't seem like anything major at the time. He just seemed like he had a bug. And at the time, his pediatrician's office was restricted. You had to fit kind of a certain criteria of symptoms to be able to go in. My kids had, you know, they were frequently getting strep. And I was always kind of on the fence, like, is this something we need to go in for? Is this just a bug? You know, so I usually give it a couple days to kind of see what was going to happen. He didn't have any nausea, vomiting. My kids never presented with a sore throat. So he was just kind of blah. But I did call the pediatrician's office. I talked to the nurse on call each day, and she just kind of kept tabs on him. We checked symptoms back and forth. And then on about day 3, he perked up, and that was the end of it. So I didn't really think anything about it, and life went on. Several weeks later, his first little symptom cropped up. So he was doing virtual school and he was talking, you know, with his class, with a teacher. And I started hearing this little word come out and I thought maybe it was like a processing thing, or he was, you know, just kind of reaching for thoughts. When he had a session, he'd been seeing a therapist since early second grade. she really brought it to my attention that she was hearing it a lot in his session and just kind of made note of it and said, it's probably nerves, it's probably anxiety, you know, the world kind of crashed down around him. So that was kind of it. And that lasted maybe a week or two. That faded away. And then his first little motor tic came in. And again, it was during school hours. He was on the computer. And it would, initially, when he would do it, he was distracted. It wasn't something he was just, if he was talking to me, I wouldn't see it. But if he was involved in an activity, I would see an eyebrow raise. And then that, after a week or two, that would go away. And then it would be a shoulder shrug. So these just kind of little subtle movements started popping in. And I thought, okay, I don't know what that is. So I guess I didn't really clock it at the time. I just thought it was odd. And then after several weeks, I realized that these tics were kind of coming and going and something would fade away and something new would pop up. So it's kind of fuzzy on me for the timeline, but shortly thereafter, so that would have been probably early summer, he went into the pediatrician and I brought it to their attention. I said, you know, he's doing these little movements and things. He has no awareness of it. He's not having any pain. Nothing else is going on. And at that point, the pediatrician, you know, examined him and just decided it's probably transient or developmental tics. He was 11, 12-ish at the time. And apparently that's a thing in early adolescence. And that was kind of it. So no medication, no other follow-up. He just kind of said, you know, nothing to worry about. So I kind of shelved it and didn't think about it again. And I just noted it because it was not severe. It was not interfering with his day-to-day life. So, you know, school resumed in the fall of 2020. Yeah, fall of 20. Sorry, but the time kind of all mushes together there. So in January of 2021, so not quite a year later, he had a mild case of COVID, a little fever, a day or two of lethargy. And then within a couple weeks, he started developing really aggressive tics. So those little tiny motor tics turned into, I mean, it was like a neck tic that was like a rhythmic twitching. And I wasn't seeing him at home. I was still seeing the really tiny ones at home, but I started getting calls and emails from teachers saying, you know, he's struggling to focus on his Chromebook. He's struggling to get through the class. They would send him to the nurse's office. The nurse would call me and say, I don't know what to do with him. I think you need to come and get him. And I'm thinking, what on earth is going on? So the first time he came out of school with that really intense tic, I couldn't believe my eyes. Like I'd never seen it before. And what was interesting is it was only presenting at school. So I don't know if that school environment was stressful. He was anxious at school or if the tic made the anxiety failed the tic. And anyway, we were just seeing those really aggressive ones initially at school, and he would come home and over an hour or so, it would fade away and he was back to his kind of little baseline tiny tics. And then, you know, the big tics kept on going. And then we started seeing more rage and more aggression and more anxiety. And just all of these symptoms started piling on just within probably a month to 6 weeks after that initial trigger, which was that COVID infection. So back to the pediatrician, then they started trying to manage those bigger tics. So, you know, anxiety meds, he was put on clonidine, different things like that to help with anxiety and insomnia and all of these new symptoms that were piling on. And again, I just thought this was maybe just a bigger version of those transient tics, that transient tic disorder. So I didn't know anything beyond that at that point. And then the rage became panic attacks, which again, you know, more medicine got piled on to try to manage that. And I just felt like he was just spiraling out. So I'm trying to think time-wise, we were just kind of spinning our wheels. You know, we weren't really getting any answers, and they just kind of were wanting to put out the fires of the symptoms at the time. And in my mind, I just kept thinking like this can't be right. Like, where did all of this come from? He just really changed so quickly overnight after that initial COVID trigger. So
were the psych meds that he was given, did they help at all?
He had a medication called hydroxyzine, which is in the antihistamine family. Because he was so young, he was not eligible to have any, you know, like true anxiety meds. So he would use that. So if he was in a panic attack or in a rage, it might take it down from a 10 to maybe a 7. I wouldn't say it was a huge impact, but it did help in the moment. But I mean, he was just changing. Like, his personality just changed completely. He was not an angry kid. He was not a raging kid. When he would kind of come back out of it, he was remorseful. He was upset. He was sad that he had done all that. And he didn't know why. He just felt like his body was out of control, whether it was the motor tics or the anger. So he was really struggling emotionally with how he was reacting to things because he could see it from both sides. His emotional regulation was just all over the place.
Dealing with this while he's also in middle school, so there's puberty to contend with too. Like, what's puberty?
Yes, exactly. And it was a confusing time because I thought, you know, is there something else going on that I'm missing? Is he struggling in school? Is there some sort of bullying issue? Because at home, I was seeing a much different side of the tics, but at school, they were definitely reporting to me that it was very aggressive, you know, and it was even sometimes at night when he was trying to go to sleep, You know, he would struggle to go to sleep. Sometimes I'd lie next to him and you could just feel his body just rhythmically moving, or his hands were twitching. And he would just, you know, I would try to gently lay my hand and I could just feel him moving. And he just could not settle to sleep because his body was just moving all the time. So anyway, back to the pediatrician multiple times to adjust meds, things like that. At this point, I started Googling, you know, like sudden onset of tics or move. I didn't really know what tics were at the time. So I was Googling and just trying to learn. And at some point, PANDAS came up. So I started looking down that. You know, at that, and I was not sure, you know, I'd never heard of it. You know, when I started looking back, I thought, you know, he was sick with the COVID, then he was sick prior to that. And it was kind of the light bulb starting to come on. So one of the visits, I did mention that to the pediatrician, because he'd had an episode of like a 3-week period of frequent urination at night. He would just go to bed up and down all night. And again, he was back and they ruled out UTIs, things like that. And again, it seemed unrelated to the tics. But when I saw the PANDAS criteria, you know, it can be all of these kind of different cascade of symptoms. And he was starting to check more and more of the boxes as time went on. So when I floated the idea to the pediatrician, he was pretty dismissive. He just said, it's controversial. It's a controversial diagnosis. I felt like we were spinning our wheels. So I said, you know, could we have a referral to a neurologist? So we were sent to a neurologist in St. Louis, several month wait to get in. You know, they did the examination and said, you know, he's got tics, he's got this, he's got that. And again, I asked about PANDAS and they said it's controversial. They basically didn't believe in it, but did say he will have these tics. They will get worse every time he's sick, whether it's a cold, a flu, a strep, or whatever. So I just hit another wall at that. So after the neurology appointment, I was just really frustrated. I didn't quite know what to do next. So again, I'm starting Googling. I'm online and I find PANDAS doctors. And we found we did a virtual consult with a PANDAS doctor. He felt like he fit the criteria just based off of his health history. He ordered labs to rule out any co-infections, which I thought maybe that's worth exploring. All of that came back clear. He did put him on a 2-week round of antibiotic and said, if he responds, that's probably your tell that it's PANS or PANDAS, you know, if he improves. And he did. I wouldn't say he was 100% better, but everything kind of dampened a little bit. So that doctor's next recommendation was tonsillectomy and IVIG. And because he was at such a distance and we didn't have anybody locally, I was hesitant to jump into that for financial reasons, just because I wasn't sure about IVIG being, you know, the magic that was going to help him. So again, I'm back Googling and then somehow or another, I landed on a PANDAS page and your name, the Resilience name came up. So I started researching, looking at your clinic, watched the videos, found out more, read lots of testimonies about different families on your page and made the appointment, and that was our first big step towards real change. So it was a long road to get there. So in June or July of 2022 is when we started with Resilience.
I feel so frustrated every time I hear a mom talk about a provider saying it's a controversial diagnosis.
Yes.
And and I know that this was a while back, but I know it's still happening as well. And it just feels like an absolute kick in the gut.
Yes, it absolutely was. Because he was at his absolute worst. I mean, we were sitting in that neurology office and he was just ticking and twitching, you know, because he was anxious and he was scared and he was thinking like, what's this doctor going to say or not say? So he was presenting as his, you know, as a really good representation of himself. And the doctors just look at him like, yep, that's just not PANDAS, you know? And I just walked out there so frustrated.
Describing exactly what happened with PANDAS. So they're saying PANDAS is controversial. It's not PANDAS, but every time he gets sick, he's going to have this happen.
Yeah.
That
and that's what I was
is
seeing.
What PANDAS
absolutely was. And every time, I mean, he would get a little bit better and then he'd have a cold and then it would ramp up again. And then, or he'd have strep or whatever, an ear infection. And it was just riding this roller coaster of symptoms going from bad to worse, bad to worse. And through the middle school years, it was so hard on him socially, you know, in the school setting. It was a very rough time.
So I always want to talk to people who are actually healthcare providers who are dealing with this with their children about your experience, because it is so infrequently talked about in schools, even when it's doing better now. I learned about it a little bit when I was in naturopathic medical school 15 years ago, but it's not something that many, especially conventional doctors, are learning about, and they're not going to be presented the reality of what it is. They're not going to be presented PANDAS as anything other than what their healthcare system is that they work for. So what they believe about it, right? And so being a healthcare provider yourself, I know that when this arrived, you had already been not practicing for a little while because, as you shared, I don't think you shared it today, but you shared it when we our last recording, that you had left your practice when all of the dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyspraxia, when that all showed up to help support him more with all the therapies and everything that he needed to go and the supports that he needed. So I know you hadn't been practicing for a few years, but still, you'd been practicing for 19 years.
Yeah, go ahead. No, I was just going to say, yeah, in my education, it was not, pain disorder was not presented either. So I was, yeah. I was brand new to that. And yeah, I had been out of the practice for probably 3-ish years at this point. And I had stepped back when Liam had his dyslexia diagnosis. And at that point, he was getting a lot of intensive intervention. He was going to OT, vision therapy, dyslexia tutoring 3 times a week. And it was just impossible to get him to all those places after school with after full school day. So anyway, I started a work from home position and that's how I transitioned.
Yeah. Having the medical background and education and everything, and I'm sure that there's the feelings that must come up and the frustration of something is happening with my kid and I can't figure out what's going on.
And
that
was
a little bit about that.
Yeah, that was it. Because, you know, I was seeing these changes before my eyes and, you know, racking my brain, trying to figure out what was it, what, because just nothing seemed to fit. And, you know, he was seeing a therapist. So we were kind of, she was addressing more of the psychological changes, the rage, the anger, the depression wasn't really changing. But my gut was just telling me like something has happened. Like he did not change like this overnight. Like where do these tics come from? And underneath all of this, which I was not aware of at the time, but OCD was starting to creep in as a new symptom. And it did not present visibly, I guess I would say. You know, it was not the hand washing rituals or checking doorknobs or things like that. For him, it was very internal. It was a lot of intrusive thoughts that he had not expressed yet. He had not shared with anybody yet. His therapist didn't know. I didn't know. So we had even more on board creeping in and feeding that anxiety and the rage and all of this, these other symptoms. You know, I'm reaching out to different colleagues of mine. I'm reaching out to therapist friends of mine. I've got a friend that's a nurse MP. She was in school at the time and was aware of PANDAS. So there's a little glimmer of hope that newer practitioners are being taught PANDAS. And it was on her board exams, but she could give me a little bit of info. So she directed me to a few resources. That's where we started NSAID therapy for a short period of time. So, I was just really grasping at straws, thinking like, I've got to be able to figure this out. And as a mom, you just feel so much guilt that you just can't help your child and you just see them falling apart in front of your eyes. So it was very, very hard. You know, and I look back and it's crystal clear, but in the moment, you know, when you're just in the weeds with it, we were just floundering.
Yeah. And I appreciate you sharing that because there are many healthcare professionals who listen to our podcast and whose children have PANS and that they're experiencing the, oh my gosh, what is going on? Things that should be helping this aren't. We can't figure this out. None of it's making sense. And then getting some like pushback from their colleagues when they do bring stuff up about PANDAS when it comes to them. So it's really just so helpful that you're willing to share that part of your story. So, Julie, we were talking a little bit about this dyslexia and dysgraphia and dyspraxia that you had seen onset before the PANS PANDAS by several years. And so what I wanted to make sure that we pointed out and discussed very briefly is that sometimes this can come on as a neuroinflammatory symptom, and sometimes it is a completely separate thing. And so I wanted to make sure we're clear for your son's case what we were dealing with and what we're talking about when it comes to that as far as healing goes. Because many people, if it's onset with PANS, it is something that homeopathy is very likely to help with. And if it is something that was onset with a big gap separate from PANS, it is less likely that homeopathy alone is going to help. Homeopathy might help with some of the therapies be integrated more effectively and work together synergistically, but alone homeopathy is not likely to resolve that. So what was your experience? And I bring this up just because as you shared, it was a slow moving process for you. It wasn't like an over the cliff immediately, all of the things exploded at once. So I just want to make sure we understand, was that part of the slow moving evolution of the PANS for you, or is it really truly a separate thing?
I feel it's very truly separate because it was within a week of turning 11 when he got that first bug that eventually led to his onset of COVID symptoms. If you back up, he was diagnosed at the end of second grade. So he was 7 when he was officially diagnosed with dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyspraxia. He's kind of a visual processing. He had a lot going on. But prior to that, even in preschool, I could look back and see he was having struggles. It was not reading yet, but it was all of, I think a lot of people probably don't realize that dyslexia goes beyond reading. There's a lot of, you know, right-left discrimination struggles, sequencing. Like if he were a little, when he was little, to tell a story, he would have a hard time getting the activities or the actions in the right order. So anything in sequencing, learning days of the week, months of the year, things like that, he really struggled with in preschool. He could not hold a pencil when he left preschool, just the grip. He couldn't do that. But I was told, he's a boy, he'll get it. And I thought, okay, I mean, the teachers know. And then he started kindergarten and we started seeing more and more issues. And again, my gut was just telling me something is not right. And academically, he hung in there until he hit the wall at the end of first grade. And at that point, I started asking deeper questions, went back to the pediatrician. I took just examples of his work because his handwriting, by about second grade, kids go from, you know, those early formative kind of scribbly letters to it starts to look like real writing. And his was just all over the place. So for him, his dysgraphia presented as he could not write and he couldn't stay on the line. He couldn't stay in the margins. He mixed capital and lowercase. So I was at a parent-teacher conference at the beginning of second grade. And again, they told me, you know, have you read to him? Have you tried worksheets, you know, practicing? And I thought, I can't do this again. So I just took all of his work and went to the pediatrician's office and said, I don't know what to do. You know, I didn't know who to ask. And the pediatrician recognized red flags and he got referred to audiology to rule out auditory processing issues, neuropsych for testing, and OT for evaluation. So we were really on track to get him checked out. And that's where his dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyspraxia diagnoses came from. And at that point, we had a diagnosis, so we could start with pretty intensive interventions. And he was moving quickly in that realm and really showing progress. So that was between second grade and fifth grade. He was really focusing on all of that remediation. And it was at the end of fifth grade that we had the onset of COVID. So we kind of had one problem under control, and then we had a new issue on board.
Yeah. So it does sound like it was present all along, and he was yes. able to keep up for the most part until it reached a point that he had reached his limit.
Yes, he just
and then it became a much bigger problem. So had you not been paying attention all along, it might have felt like it was a sudden thing. But
yeah. And with his PANDAS type symptoms, he did not have any regression that you might see. He did not have a regression in reading, academic skills, anything like that. He did say he didn't feel as smart, and that was more attributed to kind of brain fog that was on board. But he was hanging in there academically. I think it felt like it was more effort. Mm-hmm. But again, that was really the only thing that I would say that I saw in that affected him in the classroom.
Yeah. Before we move forward, I want to go backwards just a little bit. And you talked about how you had been researching and then you had also taken Liam's issues to some of your provider colleagues
mm-hmm. yeah.
to try and figure out where was it that you were finally able to get validation and be like, okay, this is PANS. This is what we're doing. Where did you find that validation?
I found it in a mom's Facebook group. I mean, I was hitting the wall with provider friends, with medical practitioners, just across the board. And, you know, I was getting information online and something in my gut just felt like, you know, PANS just kind of fits the bill. I mean, he just was really checking a lot of boxes, but I couldn't find anybody that was a PANS provider, you know, that knew what to do with it. My therapist friends weren't familiar with it. The therapist he was working with wasn't sure what that was. I mean, she was trying to help him symptomatically, but didn't realize what the condition was. So anyway, I just started Googling and I started messing around at finding different Facebook groups and online groups. And the one I landed in originally was more medically slanted, but your resilience clinic popped up multiple times. And then I went from there and jumped over to your clinic and read more and more information about what other families are struggling with. I was like, this is it. I know that's what it is. And then when I made that initial intake call, when we did that consult, I mean, I spent 3 hours on the phone with the provider and she was so validating. It was the very first time that I felt like I was in the right place, that we were on the right track, that there was a glimmer of hope. And she was just sharing, you know, other clients and patients and the success stories. And I thought, okay, I think we're finally in the right place. At least somebody understands what this is and how it can present.
This is one thing I love about this community is for so many of us, it's the moms. It's the moms who lead us where we need to go in order to get help for our kids, which is a lovely thing. So tell us about Liam.
At his worst, he was in about sixth to seventh grade, and the tics were really the most visible, the most debilitating for him. It was this kind of neck twitching, shoulder shrugging combination. He was getting really complex tics at this point. It wasn't just in his neck. He was starting to get arm twitches and finger movements, and it was hard for him to write because sometimes his hands just didn't want to cooperate. So physically, he felt like he was losing control of his body, and he was very frustrated. And for a, you know, 11, 12, 13-year-old kid, that's a really scary feeling. So that was really the most visible part. At home, we were seeing a lot of personality changes, a lot of rage, a lot of panic attacks at times, which came out of nowhere. Underneath all of this was OCD, which was not super visible yet. And he was keeping it very private. You know, and looking back in time, once he did become more visible or more vocal about it, I didn't realize how long it had been on board and how he had been living with that kind of secret, I guess you would say, because he was scared to share what he was feeling and thinking. So the way I stumbled upon the OCD was I checked his phone one night and I just saw, I mean, probably 100 screenshots. So he would go in his room or even take his phone. He wasn't usually having his phone in his room at night, but sometimes in the night he would go and get it off the charger and take it in there. And he was just taking a jillion screenshots. And so somehow out of that conversation, he just said, well, I'm having trouble sleeping and I'm taking pictures of the time so then I know how long I have left to sleep. And it was just kind of this mental spiral you could see. And then he let me know that sometimes in his room, he would check the doorknobs or he would check under the bed. And I started thinking like, okay, this is new. And I brought it to his therapist that he was seeing at the time. And she started, you know, getting a little more information out of him. And he let us know that there were a lot of intrusive thoughts, a lot of scary thoughts. And we were working with resilience at this point. And it just seemed like that OCD was just ramping up despite it. So I brought him to his provider. Remedies were adjusted and we did everything we could. And we got to a point where I was concerned because it was getting more and more, I guess it was just taking up more and more of his life. And he was a freshman in high school at this point. And one day I picked him up and I started seeing this movement. He was knocking on himself, which seems peculiar. And I was just driving and I was watching him in the rearview mirror and he was just kind of doing this and then kind of knocking on his head. And I watched it for a few days and it was still there. And I asked him about it and he had said, well, I have these thoughts in my head and I'm trying to get them to stop. So in his mind, he thought if I hit them or I shake them or I break up that thought, it'll make it stop. So again, brought that back to his resilience provider and just let her know what was going on. And it just seemed like it was ramping up. So we eventually added ERP in with his resilience care. And that really started him to start to taper off with the intensity of the OCD, because that was really the most stubborn symptom for him.
So ERP is, just for everybody who is listening who might not have heard that before, ERP is exposure response prevention. It's a specific therapy designed for OCD. And so I want to talk just a little bit about the treatments that you tried before you got to homeopathy and a little bit about therapy. So what you've mentioned so far, and I believe that this is all that you really tried, was mostly psych meds. And then you had a short, you would occasionally use NSAIDs and the very short course of antibiotics, and then went to homeopathy pretty quickly. And so it's just, you know, beyond frustrating with all of the walls that you hit and the people who were acknowledging pandas without acknowledging pandas, and then not even offering a short course of an antibiotic, but being willing to offer psych meds that have all sorts of bigger complications than even a short course of antibiotics. So just really frustrating to have that. Was there anything else that you had tried treatment-wise before?
No, that covers it. He'd been in talk therapy since second grade. So he'd been using that. And I'm sure that really helped him navigate a lot of these health challenges, you know, because he was he was pretty young when all of this started, and it's a lot to process. So I'm thankful that he had her to talk to through all of this. The psych meds, I can't tell that they, I mean, I don't know what he would have been like without them though, so I don't know, but I could not see that they did anything magical to, you know, he was still having panic attacks. He was still having rage, all these big, big psych symptoms that came out of nowhere. He was struggling with insomnia. And I just felt like every time I went to the doctor, we were getting new medications just to try to put out more fires and with minimal improvement. The short course of antibiotic was more to just see if he would improve. It wasn't like, and now we're going to do a month of it. It was just like, yep, that helped a little bit. Here's on to the next thing. So we're not getting anywhere.
Right. And I know that as you said, that the ERP really helped with getting the OCD finally to start to move in the right direction and to get under better control. And I want to make sure that we mention, just for anybody who's listening, that yes, sometimes ERP in particular or therapy in general can be helpful when we're at a really sticky symptom, especially OCD, which is one of those stickier symptoms. And timing is important. And I think that one reason that you were able to, on the earlier side, incorporate the ERP in addition to homeopathy and find success is because Liam had so much experience in therapy prior to the introduction of ERP. So he was used to going and talking to people about what he was experiencing, doing the work or learning new skills and practicing the skills and everything. So he was primed for it to be successful in a way that many children are not because of his longstanding experience in a therapeutic relationship.
And I will share that if he had started ERP earlier when he was in the rage and in the panic and that, you know, the intensity, I don't think he would have been as successful because I don't think he would have been receptive to it. And there were even times, even though he had spent hours and hours in therapy since he was in second grade, you know, now he was a freshman in high school when he started ERP, he took a long time with that therapist to build the trust, to build the time to share with her the deepest, darkest, scariest stuff. I mean, they worked on a lot of the superficial, you know, he has aquariums and he would worry about those fish and he would check the fish and his OCD was presenting a lot of checking and rechecking the chemistry and things like that. So they worked on those sorts of OCD presentations and kind of got the more minor ones under control. But it was months of time before he would open up. She knew there was something there and just kept at it and kept with him and kept building that trust and letting her know, nothing you say is going to scare me. I've heard it before, because he just could not, he couldn't verbalize it for her. So it, even with his experience, it took him a long time, but all of those smaller OCD presentations faded away pretty quickly. But the more intrusive thoughts took a lot of time. So it was not a quick fix either, but it definitely was a piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. And I appreciate you sharing that it was still challenging because ERP can be, it can be the final piece for some people because these thoughts, they get sticky and they create new neural pathways. And we sometimes need to actively work to unlearn them or to learn different ways of engaging with them and all of that, in addition to homeopathy. And the two can work very synergistically together. And if we try to make things go faster by introducing therapy before a child is ready, when there's still a lot of neuroinflammation, it can backfire and then become less available to you when you really need it and when it's the most opportune time. So always just talk to your provider about whether it's the right timing to introduce therapy. Because again, you can't therapy away inflammation. So if it's still primarily inflammation driven, there's only so much success that you're going to have.
Yeah. And I think that because he was doing so well with so many other symptoms, it was just that OCD that just, they just couldn't break that cycle. And I think that's why ERP was so successful. And even his psychiatrist said that OCD is one of the most challenging psychiatric presentations. It just is stubborn in so many people. And his ERP therapist said the same thing, you know, said, you know, was just very honest, this will not go away overnight. This is not fast. So we knew that going in and he was very patient.
All right. So you found out about homeopathy through Facebook groups that led you to our group. And then you learned about homeopathy through the guides and the videos and communicating with other parents and just seeing what people are posting. What made you finally decide to give it a try?
We just were not making any progress. You know, I felt like we had exhausted the medical route and we're really just dismissed. So the Facebook group was really the first place I saw parents sharing wins, sharing growth, sharing healing. And then part of me, you know, coming from the chiropractic world, I was so frustrated with myself that I didn't think to look in this realm first. You know, I thought, why did I, it's more systemic. It's a systemic problem. Why was I thinking we could just take this pill for this and this pill for this? Anyway, so there was part of me that when I did get there, I thought, oh my gosh, why didn't I look for this first? But anyway, we got there when we did. And when we started with our provider, again, I think Liam's therapy background really helped because he was always very involved with his care. He was on the call each time as much as I was. So I could report what I was seeing. He could report how he felt because it was important because a lot of his symptoms were on the inside. I did not see some of the things he would report. So she really needed to hear both sides because he would report a lot of kind of herky jerky sensations on his inside, like on his, in his muscles, and I didn't see them. So again, I think it was really important for him to be able to share that so she could get a bigger picture of what was going on.
Tell us about Liam's healing journey as a whole. What has that been like?
It was, you know, I want anybody that's listening to just understand that it's probably not going to be overnight. I mean, in our experience, it definitely wasn't. It was steady forward progress. We had periods of plateau. I would not say he had any major progressions. By the time he started with resilience, he was not flaring like he used to. So we had that on our side, but he was at his worst. You know, his symptoms were still at his worst. He still was having periods of rage and panic and all of these symptoms. So she was presented with some really big symptoms to manage when we first started. But, you know, I can remember the very first remedy, it was like the volume was getting turned down. The intensity was coming down. The frequency of the tics were still there, but the intensity, I mean, when he was doing this movement, this was his Goshi movement, you could hear his knuckles hitting his bone. I mean, it was so loud. I was worried it was going to create, I mean, he had braces at the time, so I was worried about maybe hurting his mouth or his teeth in the long term. it was affecting his ability to eat. He couldn't get through a meal without putting his utensils down to do. And he'd just get stuck in this movement loop. And he just could not stop himself. If you pulled something away, he would fight you. So it was really interesting to watch just his physical presentation just tone it down. And then when there were periods of plateau, it was just, you know, and she was really encouraging because she said, you know, the body can only heal as fast as it can. And he's kind of going through a phase where you're not going to see anything. And then you're probably going to see a big jump forward. And we would. So you just kind of hang in there and wait for that next big leap forward. So that's what he did. He had, you know, big jumps and then some plateaus and then big jumps.
One thing that I think is really interesting about your story is that we always talk about the healing pattern can frequently look like the onset pattern. Mm-hmm. And so when we see a sudden onset and really, really roller coastery types of symptoms with everything and then nothing and then everything and then nothing, then we will often see a lot more roller coaster type of healing pattern. We can see really fast and big responses, but then have a big setback when we stop responding. Your son experienced a much slower, more gradual trickle of additional symptoms. It got big for sure, and it took a while to get there. And you had a more slow and steady healing process. And so one person's healing journey is going to be one person's healing journey. And not everybody is always going to follow this pattern, but it's enough that we see it, that it is a pretty common thing that we don't expect if it's taken a while to get there, that it's going to go away overnight. And also don't expect that if you have lots of crazy ups and downs in the process with PANS, that you're going to have like a slow and steady, you know, wins the race either. Yeah.
And he was 2 years into his symptoms by the time we found resilience. So he was, you know, he had some pretty aggressive symptoms. And there were periods of time when we would report however he was doing. And she would be really honest. She said, you know, I'm going to talk to some of my colleagues. I'm not sure exactly what remedy, but I'll email you and then I'll mail it out. So I appreciated the fact that, you know, didn't always have all the answers or like, you know, let me just consult because this is kind of a stranger presentation. I'm not quite sure. But we always, you know, there was always forward progression. That's what I try to share in the Facebook group with new parents or parents that are newer to resilience is, you know, I wish it could be overnight. I wish it was like flipping a switch, but sometimes it's hard when you're just haven't seen any changes, just hang in there because the body just, it needs time.
I just want to acknowledge what you just said too, that nobody ever has all of the answers for everything.
No.
And so that's one of the things that I really love that we've created and that we offer to our clients is that, you know, you get more than one person's brain on something. So, you know, it's not like, you know, you can say, oh, I want this person to review the case. Like, that's not really how it goes. But our providers want nothing more than to see you guys heal. We love our clients and we don't want to see them forever.
Right.
You know, our job is to work ourselves out of a job, right?
Absolutely.
And so when we are feeling stuck or if we're unsure, we come to each other and we support each other and we all really work together. So, you know, you can get every single provider giving input on your case if you're in a rough patch. And that really, really matters for the providers to be able to feel confident moving forward and not feel stuck and not abandon anybody and say, oh, I've done what I can do. Let's move on. And then also for everybody who's just experienced a tough thing, like we know that there's lots of people working hard on your case. So
Yeah.
What are some of the wins that your family's had since starting homeopathy?
Oh gosh. I mean, I think so he's just back to himself, which I think is the biggest gift of all of it. You know, there was a period of time that we lost him. I mean, his personality had just shifted to the point where, you know, at the time, like I said, I thought maybe he was just like the preteen angsty, you know, this is his, how he's going to present as a teenager. But so much of it was just such bigger symptoms. So it was so amazing to watch all of that just slowly fade away and his personality and himself reemerge. And he could even start to see it. I mean, it took a little longer for him to see it, but he could feel himself coming back and he would say he feels like himself again. I could see it a little bit earlier than he could. So he does great in the classroom academically. He is successful on his school archery team. There was a period of time when his tics were at their worst that it was affecting his archery ability and his fingers were not cooperate and he had twitchiness in his shoulders. So obviously that's going to affect your accuracy. So he loves archery. He's not ever been a big team sport person, but that's something that has really been a big part of his life is archery. So for his tics to be under control now, even last season, it's a December to March season. Even last December, he was having just a little bit of a residual twitchiness in there that was affecting him at time to time. But this year it's completely gone. So he has qualified to go to state. He'll go to state next month as an archer. So he's very excited about that. So that's a big win for him. But just to be you know, just the normal stuff, just to be able to go to bed when you want to go to bed and not have those insomnia fights every night has been amazing for him. And he, you know, one of the more interesting things, which I don't know that I even mentioned it to our provider, but he's always been hypersensitive to sound, even back to the preschool days. I mean, he was one of those kids that walk around like this. And we always used headphones or little foamy earplugs for the school lunchroom or for concerts or for any school programs. And I told his provider this over the summer. He voluntarily asked to go to a orchestra concert. His sister's in orchestra. He's never gone to one. The sound of strings is just, he always said it was like nails on chalkboard. Even when she practices, he puts in the earphones. So he attends concerts by choice now, which is really exciting because he can tolerate it. So something in the healing process has really just helped his nervous system be able to, probably just a sensory input aspect has settled to him. So he's a lot more comfortable in crowds and in concerts and ball games and things like that, which is exciting.
I got to tell you, Julie, the archery is probably going to go down among some, one of my favorite wins, because it's such a like visceral and visible presentation of something that PANS took away.
Absolutely did.
And that healing brought back.
Mm-hmm.
And like how more appropriate or like amazing of a really just good visual of what a tick would do.
Oh,
when you're trying to be precise in hitting a target with an arrow. And what is capable of now that he's healed and his nervous system is just settled.
When he has ticks, were at their worst, any stress or any anxiety would just make the tick worse, then he would tick more. And it was just, he would get stuck in this loop. So when he was out of practice or at a tournament and he would start to feel a twitch and then think, oh gosh, I need to be able to do this. And then it would just get worse. I mean, I've got video from his sixth and seventh, eighth grade year at tournaments, and you can see him trying to fight the ticks and trying to shoot between them and trying to do it. And you can just see his physical body just not cooperating with him. So yeah, he's come a huge, huge way.
I feel like the archery story also speaks to me, and one of the reasons why I'm so grateful that you're coming on and sharing his story, because hearing pieces of even Liam's story, you know, I still have a kiddo that is in the middle of healing, and she is dealing with tics that are disruptive to the sport that she is trying to play. And so you're even speaking to me here and reminding me that there's hope for this and giving me reassurance that things that we're sitting in that we're struggling with right now will get better.
Yeah. And that's what, you know, somebody shared that with me when we were at the worst, and I would go to that group because it was so encouraging to me, because I would think, oh my gosh, you know, I don't know. Or I'd see somebody that was mentioning tics and I would message them and they would be so lovely to reach back out to me and just, you know, share their story or hang in there, just a little word of encouragement, because it's so frustrating. And the worry that you have as a parent when you see your child just struggling and you're thinking, I don't know if they're ever going to come out of this. And what if this is life now? And, you know, just all of that, those feelings, it was just so helpful for me to be able to have that group to reach out to. And they always were very supportive.
So I always say that PANS is a family condition, because it doesn't really just affect the kiddo who's mm-hmm. struggling. It affects the whole family mm-hmm. in so many ways. So I'm just curious what life is like for your family now that he's healed.
I'd say life is just so normal now. I mean, for such a long period of time, there was just so much hypervigilance with him. I always felt like I was trying to stay a step ahead, you know, monitor for triggers or trying to manage his mood or trying to prevent a meltdown or, you know, just trying to kind of gauge where we were at today. And do you think we really can go to that little family outing, or we have people coming over? How's that going to go? And, you know, life gets pretty small sometimes when you've got a child that is, you know, at their peak with those sorts of symptoms. Sometimes you can't go to the social outing, or he wouldn't go to a concert. So we would have to manage that. And I know his sister was affected because, you know, I was trying to be really mindful to not feel like he was taking all the attention. And, you know, because for periods of time, there was just so much focus on him and what was going on. So, you know, he's definitely come out the other side. He still sees his resilience provider, but they're on about every 3 months. So they're kind of just trying to fine tune a few little things that probably really aren't even PANDAS related anymore, but she just is keeping close tabs on him and they're trying to tweak a few little things. But I would say that the intensity of where he started has resolved. And, you know, as a mom, it's just like a giant weight has been lifted off. You know, the worry that I have had for this child is just like putting this huge weight down for the first time in years. Yeah.
What advice would you give to parents who are where you were back whenever this all started?
I just wish we had gotten to resilience earlier. I wonder if his symptoms hadn't ramped to the point that he had, that maybe he could have, you know, healed a little faster. I don't know. Looking back, I've followed the group and I see a lot of parents having hesitation. So I always try to share the wins that he had and try to share how intense his symptoms were, this was the first place he saw any improvement, any healing, anything long term. Just try to give him that little nudge to just take the plunge. So we spun our wheels for a long time, and those symptoms just ramped and ramped and ramped. So that would be my only thing, is to maybe start here. And then, you know, if you might need to add in a psychotropic, you know, psych med or something like that, or more therapy, you can always add that in addition to your provider. I just feel like we wasted a lot of time going the other route.
Yeah. This is one thing I love about our group, is it's such a beautiful example of give and take. You were able to show up in the group at a time where you needed to take information, education, hope, all of the things. And now here you are back giving that hope and helping families through. And it's just really such a lovely, lovely thing of the community.
Yeah, I think the community has just, you know, I learned so much, and that's eventually what got me to resilience. So if anybody can take anything from Liam's story and from our experience that might help them in any way, I'm happy to share. And, you know, when he was first diagnosed with dyslexia, there are dyslexia mom groups all over the Facebook as well. And I learned so much from those. And those moms guided me. And I turned around once we got our feet underneath us to share back again. And Liam has shared his story about dyslexia and dysgraphia, and he's had several people in his school go on to be diagnosed. So I always try to tell him, you know, try to find the good in the struggle. And if you share your story, you never know, somebody that might just need be what they need to hear right then.
Yeah. Well, Julie, I can actually attest to the fact that you're not just showing up now, that you have shown up all along. And I've seen you here and there commenting when you were definitely not where you are at now with recovery. And yeah. Still, you know, sometimes you would show up and you would need a little support, and sometimes you would show up and you would be offering support, and the back and forth and the bouncing around. And I love that we have the capacity to do that, because it helps all of us stay going when we remember, I needed support and now I'm getting it and I'm going to need it again, but I'll be in a place that I can give it again. And I'm just, as I said at the beginning, so grateful, because you're in the place that you really just don't need so much support anymore. Almost ever. And you still are showing up regularly to share your wins, to share support with people, and that you were willing to come back and record this whole episode again, just so that you could share your story and your experience with the community. And so I'm very grateful that you are still showing up for people. And it just shows the heart that you have, that you're helping others that you don't even know, because you know how important it is to pay it forward and the support that you receive too. So thank you. I'm very grateful.
Absolutely. And I'm just so grateful for Resilience. They've given him his whole life back. And I'm just so grateful for everything that you all do and the platform that you've provided to educate more people and to give people a place to come together. Because yeah, I've shared little wins along the way, you know, especially when he would be in plateaus and I would think, oh gosh, it's been a month since we've seen any change. And then there'd be a leap forward. I know I shared about those when I realized his tolerance for a concert, you know, that came out of nowhere. You know, it was really exciting. I wanted to share, I mean, we weren't even technically working on this, but it was just a really kind of exciting win for us.
Well, I just want to say that obviously you are still hanging out in the group and yes. Giving people a little encouragement all along the way. So if anybody's listening to this and has not joined the group and wants to get some encouragement from someone who's much further along, you got somebody here who's still
absolutely
showing up. Commenting.
Yes. If anybody ever wants to reach out, I would be happy to share more details or you know, give them that nudge of encouragement or just that little pep talk to hang in there.
Well, thank you again, Julie. It has been so lovely talking to you again and getting even a little bit more details with some things that you hadn't shared yesterday. So maybe it's a blessing that yeah. We've got the issues that we had, that we were able to come back together and get just a little bit more goodness from you. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We hope you found this episode helpful, hopeful, and inspiring. We would love to connect with you on social media and have you as part of our amazing community. You can find us on Facebook by searching for Homeopathy for Pans and Pandas.
If Facebook isn't your thing, you can also connect with us on Instagram and YouTube by searching for Resilience Naturopathic or clicking the links in our show notes. You can also visit our website, resiliencenaturopathic.com.
As always, we value your partnership in advocacy and education. Your support through following, sharing, rating, and reviewing our podcast is crucial in our mission to teach the world about PANS, PANDAS, and homeopathy. So if you found this podcast helpful, please leave us a review. Together, we are making a difference.
And finally, this podcast really is for you. Your questions and feedback help us make sure we are answering the right questions so you can feel confident making the next right step for your kids. Send us your questions or request guests by emailing us at podcast@resiliencenaturopathic.com, also linked in the show notes.